ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ. ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ. ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ. So tonight we're going to speak about the role of ladies in Vanashram Dharma, and otherwise known as Stri Dharma. So that means the duty of women. So what's the first thing I'm going to say? Come on. And you have to sit where I can see you. Yeah. You can move the lotus. So, as we mentioned before, you can turn that down, please, Prabhuji. It's too loud. As we mentioned before, many people have the opinion that the women have no role in Vanashram Dharma. Now, why would that be? Because Varna means outside the house, and the role of women is inside the house. Now, this is from traditional Vedic culture. In traditional Vedic culture, the house was actually shaped, all the houses had a courtyard around them. And even there was an inner part of the house and an outer part of the house. So the men would even deal with the outer part of the house where the animals, of course, were outside. And but the ladies, it would always stay in the inner side of the house. And in this way, if somebody came calling, they wouldn't necessarily run into the ladies of the house. There would be some buffer zone. And the idea is that in the Vedic culture, that the men and women, they would create separation so that there was not, let's say, not opportunity for Maya, like that. Because everybody knows, men and women, they find each other attractive. They're attractive to the senses. And the result of that is, it can be chaos in society. The fact of the matter is that the stability of the culture rests upon the chastity of the women. And it's a very, very important role, because the men cannot maintain the culture. It's actually the role of the women to maintain the culture. And they do so by their chastity and by their dedication to religious principles. So there's many examples of this in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And we'll speak about some of those tonight. We'll see how far we get. Now, some people also, they have the opinion, like we said, that women, they have no varna, but that's not exactly the case, because varna means material body. Varna means guna and karma. So from the fourth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna explains that the varna is a result of guna and karma, and that this arrangement is created by him. So, guna means this material body. We get the body from our parents, and according to the nature of our parents, according to their guna, if our father or mother are in, say, sattva gun, it's likely that the child will also be a person of sattva gun, because the principle is that a like soul, at the time of conception, a soul who is very much similar to those parents will be attracted to take birth in that family. Because naturally, as they say, birds of a feather flock together. So we want to be with the people we're like, or who can facilitate our development in a particular way. If we are pursuing a life of sattva gun, naturally, it would be very difficult for us to take birth in a family that's very much taken up with tamagun or rajagun. So the similarity is there. And because of this, traditionally in India, well, let's say the perversion of the Vanashram system is that Varna became a birthright, that if one's father is a Brahmana, then the son would also be a Brahmana, and so on like this. But this is not supported by Bhagavad Gita, nor is it supported by other Vedic literature. The fact of the matter is that according to our own nature, we can be one or the other. So ladies, they also have varna, according to their guna and karma. So guna is the body. Karma means what? Our destiny from previous life. What we are doing in previous life, we continue in this life or the next life. And so whatever we were doing then, the tendency is we're going to continue. So both of these have a role in determining where we take birth, the family that we take birth in. So the arrangement in varna and ashram, varna ashram, means that everybody has a role that's fixed up for them according to their nature, their guna and karma, their varna, and according to their ashram. So ashram means different stages of lifelong learning, or we can say staged lifelong learning, so that there's a certain type of lessons or education in youth, another stage in married life, another stage in retired life, and another stage in sannyas or renunciation. So in our ISKCON society, we know ashram fairly well. At least we know what it should be theoretically. How well it plays out practically is another thing. And of course, it's generally also seen in the situation for the men. But the women also have varna, and they have varna and they have ashram, but it's a little different. So we're going to start with the different stages of a girl's life, okay, from childhood, and then we'll follow that through until marriage. The main part of this discourse, of course, is going to be about marriage life and raising children. So, Kardama Muni. And so we want to go to Canto 3, Chapter 21, Text 15. So. You have it? 3:21:15. Do you have that chapter in the book? Yeah? Okay. So, in this, this is a conversation, this is actually, Kardama Muni. He's looking for a wife. And he does severe austerities for a long time and he pleases the Supreme Lord. And the Supreme Lord shows himself, reveals himself to Kardama Muni. Now, such a wonderful experience, right? That Kardama Muni in this situation could ask for any benediction that he wanted, or no benediction whatsoever, like Dhruva Maharaj. But Kardama Muni, he asked that the Lord would supply him with a girl of like disposition for marriage. And so we'll read here the verse and the commentary of Srila Prabhupada. So translation, therefore desiring to marry a girl of like disposition who may prove to be a veritable cow of plenty in my married life. Do you have it, Mataji? Therefore, desiring to marry a girl of like disposition who may prove to be a veritable cow of plenty in my married life, To satisfy my lustful desire, I too have sought shelter of your lotus feet, which are the source of everything, for you are like a desire tree. So that was his prayer to Lord Vishnu. And Prabhupada comments in a very nice way on this. He says, in spite of his condemning persons who approach the Lord for material advantages, Kardama Muni expressed his material inability and desire before the Lord, saying, although I know nothing material should be asked from you, I nevertheless desire to marry a girl of like disposition. The phrase, like disposition, is very significant. Formerly, boys and girls of similar dispositions were married. The similar natures of the boy and girl were united in order to make them happy. Not more than 25 years ago, and perhaps it is still current, parents in India used to consult the horoscope of the boy and girl to see whether there would be a factual union in their psychological conditions. These considerations are very important. Nowadays, marriage takes place without such consultation, and therefore, soon after marriage, there is divorce and separation. Formerly, husband and wife used to live together peacefully throughout their whole lives, but nowadays, it is a very difficult task. Kardama Muni wanted to have a wife of like disposition because a wife is necessary to assist in the spiritual and material advancement. It is said that the wife yields the fulfillment of all desires in religion, economic development, and sense gratification. If one has a nice wife, he is considered to be a most fortunate man. In astrology, a man is considered fortunate who has great wealth, very great sons, or a very great wife. Of these three, one who has a very great wife is considered to be the most fortunate. Before marrying, one should select a wife of like disposition and not be enamored by so-called beauty or other attractive features for sense gratification. In the Bhagavatam, 12th canto, it is stated that in the Kali Yuga, marriage will be based on considerations of sex only. And as soon as there is a deficiency in sex life, the question of divorce will arise. Kardama Muni could have asked his benediction from Uma, for it is recommended in the scripture that if one wants a good wife, he should worship Uma. But he preferred to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead because it is recommended in the Bhagavatam that everyone, whether he is full of desires, has no desire, or desires liberation, should worship the Supreme Lord. Of these three classes of men, one who tries to be happy by the fulfillment of material desires, another wants to be happy by becoming one with the Supreme, and another, the perfect man, wants to become a devotee. He does not want anything in return from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He only wants to render transcendental loving service. In any case, everyone should worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for he is fulfilling everyone's desires from time immemorial. The advantage of worshiping the Supreme Person is that even if one has desires for material enjoyment, if he worships Krishna, he will gradually become a pure devotee and have no more material hankering. So, this point is being made here that one should marry a girl of like disposition. So therefore, in the childhood of the girl, there's no ashram per se. The boys, they have the Gurukula ashram, where the boys will go to the house, they will live in the ashram or house of the spiritual master, be trained up generally in character development and material things according to their necessity. The boys of a Sudra nature will get a few years of training mostly in character development. Then they will go to work with their father. Those of a Vaishya nature will get a few more years, generally not more than 4 years, 5 years maximum. Those of a Kshatriya nature would stay in the Gurukula until age of 16 or 18. And those boys of a Brahminical nature would stay in the Gurukula until they are 21. And generally, all of these boys, after they left the ashram of the spiritual master, they would go to work with their father, and they would be betrothed to a young girl of like disposition. This means that the parents, they would consult each other, and they would find out. They would be able to see, of course, from their mature position, without any passion involved, is this family like our family? And if they are, then it can be a good match, because it is saying here that the boy and girl, they should be as similar as possible in their nature, in the family background, in the economic status of the family, in education. Why? Because they have to help each other. They have to be able to understand each other. And this is stated also in the seventh canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. No, wait a minute. Wait a minute. So that they should be of similar nature, so that the girl can, she can support her husband. So for this, we have to understand that there's a difference between men and women, and how they take care of each other. You may know or have heard of at least the ideology of yin and yang, the Eastern philosophy, that opposites attract. And so in this idea of yin and yang, the fact of the matter is that where the man is strong physically, the woman is weak. Where the man is weak emotionally, the woman is strong. And therefore they can support each other and help each other. The man with his physical strength and the woman with her emotional strength. So this is the idea that a man requires, actually, the help of his wife. In this lesson we get from Maharaj Priyavrata. This is from the fifth canto, first chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, 5129. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, Maharaj Priyavrata, 5129. And I'm not going to read the translation. I'm going to read from the purport here. This is a story about Maharaj Priyavrata. Maharaj Priyavrata ruled the universe for 1,100,000,000 years. Nice long life. How he did that, we don't know, but that's what it says in the Bhagavatam. And our Buddha of years is 100,000,000 years, and he ruled the universe for 11 such our Buddhas of years. In any case, he was married to his queen, Bharishmati, and he derived inspiration from her. So this is what Prabhupada's relating to in the purport. He writes here, after Maharaj Priyavrata ruled the universe for 11 arbutas of years. Can you find it? 5129. Yeah. I'm not sure where it is in the purport. It begins with, after Kavi, Mahavir, and Savana were completely trained in Paramahamsa stage of life. So I think it's not right in the beginning. After Kavi, Mahavir, and Savana. Bring it here. Let me find it. One of the men can bring it. Somebody, give this boy. He can bring it. Yeah, here. Is this it? Maharaj Priyavrata ruled the universe for 11 arbutas of years. Hang on. Stay here. Okay, that's not it. Okay, so. Okay, all right, that's where we want to start from.
Okay.
Well, let's see. No, the one just before then. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. No, from there. Maharaj Priyavrata ruled the universe for 11 arbutas years whenever he is determined to fix his bow upon the bowstring. Yeah.
This is just on the end. It's on the end.
Okay, well, you can look for either Maharaj Priyavrata or Barhismati. His queen's name should show up there.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Okay. She can read from there. Okay, so Maharaj Priyavrata. He ruled the universe for 11 arbutas of years. Whenever he was determined to fix his arrow upon the bowstring with his two powerful arms, all opponents of the regulative principles of religious life would flee from his presence in fear of the unparalleled prowess he displayed in ruling the universe. So, understand this. He's a powerful guy, right? He's running the whole universe. Huh? Such a strong man. He greatly loved his wife, Barismati, and with the increase of days, their exchange of nuptial love also increased. By her feminine behavior, as she dressed herself, walked, got up and smiled, laughed and glanced about, Queen Barismati increased his energy. Although he was a great soul, he appeared lost in the feminine conduct of his wife. He behaved with her just like an ordinary man, but he was a great soul. So the point there is that even a great man requires some support from his wife. And Prabhupada also confirms that in another place. Let me see, I don't have this marked, what the verse is. One second. Oh, you know what? Mataji, that was in the translation that I just read. So just read the translation 5129. Oops. Purports later.
Njegovo prisustvo u strahu ove neusporedive moći. moći koju je pokazao vladajući univerzumom. On je jako volio svoju ženu, Barki smati, i svakim danom se izmjena njihove bračne ljubavi uvećavala. Svojim ženstvenim ponašanjem, dok se oblačila, hodala, ustajala, smiješila, glasno smijala i gledala, kraljica Barki smati je uvećavala njegovu energiju. I tako je Mandaj bio velika duša, izgledao...
Are you reading the purport?
No.
Oh, okay. Okay, now we're going to read the second paragraph of the purport. To maintain such a life of strict vigilance, one needs the encouragement from his wife. In the Vanashram Dharma system, certain classes, such as the Brahmanas and the Sannyasis, do not need encouragement from the opposite sex. Kshatriyas and Grihasthas, however, actually need the encouragement of their wives in order to properly execute their duties. Indeed, a Grihastha or Kshatriya cannot properly execute his responsibilities without the association of his wife. When, for example, when they're doing Vedic sacrifices, that the husband, the wife must be there present at the sacrifice, and it's actually through her that everything actually takes place. So she's a very important partner in all of those affairs. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu personally admitted that a grihastha must live with a wife. Kshatriyas were even allowed to have many wives to encourage them in discharging their duties of government. The association of good wife is necessary for the life of karma and political affairs. To execute his duties properly, Maharaj Priyavrata took advantage of his good wife Barismati, who was very expert in pleasing her great husband by properly dressing herself, smiling, and exhibiting her feminine bodily features. So this is an important thing that the ladies can take note of. Of course, ladies, they like to make themselves attractive. And it's a fact that a man becomes enthusiastic by seeing the beauty of his wife. You know, there's a big deal today made about the Hajib. Is that how you say it? Hajib or Hajib? Anyway, the covering that the Muslim women wear. And that this is terrible, how they should not be forced to do this, and so on and so on. Well, I was reading an account one time of an American woman who was spending some time in the Middle East with these ladies. And she didn't wear hijab. She was just wearing, dressed like a normal American woman, right? Dressed probably in blue jeans or some kind of, you know, whatever on top. Anyway, they got back to these ladies' houses, and the ladies took off their hijab. And this American woman was so shocked to see how beautiful they were dressed and how nicely they looked, that the idea is that the woman would dress nicely for the pleasure of her husband, but she would not show her beauty to the public, because that's not being chaste, right? Her beauty is meant for her husband, not for all these other strange men. The unfortunate thing is that ladies in Western society, they want to also exploit their beauty by attracting, you know, by showing their beauty to others. And consequently, the Bhagavatam basically says that these ladies, they become like prostitutes, that they show themselves, you know, to anybody and everybody for attracting the favors of people in different ways. But the fact of the matter is that the woman's beauty is actually should be reserved for her husband. And here, Priyavrata, he was obtaining enthusiasm by seeing the nice feminine nature of his wife. So we'll continue then. Queen Barasmati always kept Maharaj Priyavrata very encouraged, and thus he executed his governmental duty very properly. In this verse, Eva, the word Eva has twice been used to indicate that Maharaj Priyavrata acted exactly like a henpecked husband, and thereby seemed to have lost his sense of human responsibility, being controlled by his wife. Actually, however, he was fully conscious of his position as a spirit soul. Although he seemingly behaved like an acquiescent karmi husband, karmi fruitive worker, Maharaj Priyavrata thus ruled the universe for 11 arbutas of years. One arbuta consists of 100 million years, and Maharaj Priyavrata ruled the universe for 11 such arbutas, 1 billion, 100 million years, somehow or other. So, the point is that the men, they need encouragement from their wives. Not only that, but they need a woman who is going to be able to understand them. So if they're of a different varna, let's say, if the man is a Kshatriya, he marries a woman who is a Shudra or vice versa, they're not going to be able to understand each other very well. And so not being able to understand each other, they'll be frustrated. Both of them will be frustrated in their efforts to work together throughout their life. The boy and girl should be very nicely matched. The parents can see to that. They, as Prabhupada mentioned, they would consult the horoscope as well. And then in marriage life, then the woman, her duty is to support her husband. Now, how does she do that? She does that by perhaps helping in various ways. We take the example of Gandhari. So Gandhari, as you know, she was the wife of the Pandavas. And the Pandavas, before the battle, they had a place in Hastinapur. And the royal household, as we're told from the Mahabharata, just the royal household had a population of 100,000 people. And Draupadi was running the household. So she's the wife of the kings. She's a princess. She's the queen. Naturally, she's going to be a powerful woman to have such powerful husbands. And how did she use that power? She actually ran the household, just like this is what most women will do. They run the household. But because she was the queen of the ruler of the world, her household was 100,000 people. Huh? So a powerful woman. And because she had she was a daughter of a king, she had the guna and karma of a queen, she understood what needed to be done, and she was able to assist her husbands in a very nice way. The other example that we can take is that of Draupadi. Gandhari. So, you know the story probably that Gandhari, she was betrothed to marry Dhritarashtra, who is blind from birth. And Dhritarashtra, because her husband was blind, she voluntarily covered her own eyes so that she would not become more proud. She would not think herself better than her husband. And by that tejas, by that austerity, she became a very, very powerful woman. There's some nice things that are said in the Bhagavatam about that also. Let me read there. First canto, is it here?
Mm-hmm.
Give her a first canto. Chapter 13, watch the wire. First canto, chapter 13. Watch. 1:13:30. So, translation. The gentle and chaste Gandhari, who was the daughter of King Subala of Kandadar, followed her husband, seeing that he was going to the Himalayan mountains, which are a delight for those who have accepted the staff of the renounced order, like fighters who have accepted a good lashing from the enemy. So this is at the end. Dhritarashtra was going, taking sannyas, or leaving the household. And so her husband is going, and Gandhari went to the mountains with him. So Prabhupada comments in the purport. Gandhari, the daughter of King Subala, was the wife of King Dhritarashtra, who was ideal as a wife devoted to her husband. The Vedic civilization especially prepares the chaste and devoted wives, of whom Gandhari is one of the most, amongst many mentioned in history. Lakshmiji, Sita Devi, is also a daughter of a great king, but she followed her husband, Lord Ramachandra, into the forest. Similarly, as a woman, Gandhari could have remained at home at her father's house, but as a chaste and gentle lady, she followed her husband without consideration. Instructions for the renounced order of life were imparted to Dhritarashtra by Vidura, and Gandhari was by the side of her husband. He did not ask her to follow him, but because he was at that time fully determined, like a great warrior who faces all kinds of dangers, he was no longer attracted to so-called wife or relatives and decided to start alone. But as a chaste lady, Gandhari decided to follow her husband to the last moment. Maharaj Dhritarashtra accepted the order of Vanaprastha, and at this stage, the wife was allowed to remain as a voluntary servitor to the husband. But in the sannyas stage, no wife can stay with her former husband. A sannyasi is considered to be a dead man civilly, and therefore the wife becomes a civil widow without connection to her former husband. Maharaj Dhritarashtra did not deny his faithful wife, and she followed her husband at her own risk. So, and then we want to read another example from the seventh canto. This is the seventh canto, chapter 11, text 25. And what's the name of that chapter? That chapter is ideal on, let me see. Ideal society?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So this is from the seventh canto of the Bhagavatam, which these last chapters are all about Vanashram Dharma. And here, this is verse 25, 7:11:25. To render service to the husband, to always be favorably disposed to the husband, to be equally well disposed to the husband's relatives and friends, and to follow the vows of the husband, these are the four principles to be followed by women described as chaste. We're not going to read the entire purport, but let's see. We'll read the first several, three or four sentences. It is very important for peaceful householder life that a woman follow the vow of her husband. Any disagreement between the husbands with the husband's vow will disrupt family life. In this regard, Chanakya Pandit gives a very valuable instruction. When there are no fights between the husband and wife, the goddess of fortune automatically comes to the home. A woman's education should be conducted along the lines indicated in this verse. The basic principle for a chaste woman is to be always favorably disposed to her husband. So this is wonderful, but many modern women will take issue with this, that the woman should be subordinate to her husband. We discussed this in earlier classes about the concept of Prakriti and Purusha, that Krishna, the original male, he is Purusha, and everything in relationship to him is Prakriti. In this material world, all the jivas who are Prakriti by nature come, and all of them are trying to be Purusha, irregardless of whether they have a man's body or a woman's body. But the man's body, by its nature, and is more of a Purusha nature, and the woman's body, by her nature, is of a Prakriti nature. And if they adopt those roles, they can get along in a proper way. or let's say they can get along nicely. When the woman attempts to become the Purusha, the controller, then there becomes difficulty because the sex energy is no longer flowing, right? You know the principle of a battery, when there's a positive terminal and a negative terminal. And when there's a potential difference between those two, the electricity will flow. So, a woman and man, they're different. And depending on that potential between them, the difference, there can be this flow of sexual energy. It can be very subtle or it can be very gross. In the full meaning of that word. Anyway. So the sex energy can flow, and both the man and the woman, they enjoy, they like the experience of the flow of the sexual energy. But if the woman tries to be like a man, then there's no potential difference between them, and the flow of the energy stops. And so this is what they say: well, I guess we're not in love anymore. You know, the love is gone from our marriage somehow. Well, it's not really like that. You know, it can be something different. Now, in the 1990s, there is a woman, she was a Seventh-day Adventist, and you may know that the Seventh-day Adventist, they are very much focused on developing a very happy family life based on religious principles. And the women are encouraged to be good housewives and mothers to the children, and to faithfully support their husband, just as like is being explained here. So one woman in the 90s, she wrote this book explaining how women, what they should be like. There was a book, I guess these books come out on a pretty regular basis. There was one in the 1970s called Fascinating Womanhood. And I don't know what the name of the book was in the 90s. Several of them came out. And some of her other, even though I practically never see a television, I was over at one devotee's house and there was a news show on. And it was about this couple whose marriage was on the rocks. They were ready to head for the divorce court. And so the woman, she saw the book in a bookstore and she thought, well, what the heck, you know, otherwise it's finished. So she bought the book and she followed the instructions, and it said, don't try to be a man, right? Be weak. Be helpless. Let your man, let your husband do the heavy work. Let him take out the garbage. Let him, you know, oh, honey, can you get that bundle for me? Can you open this jar for me? Stuff like this. Let him be the man, right? He's got muscles. He wants to do things. And so she started following this kind of advice. Of course, there's a lot more to it in the book than just letting your husband open the tight jar lid. But she followed the advice, and she said, and then the love came back into our marriage. Well, yeah, what's that mean? It means the sexual energy was again flowing. There's some difference between a man and a woman. So, you know, it's a very simple thing. Men are not attracted to men. You know, they're attracted to women. So if the women try to be like men, it's not going to work. So all this, what we're saying, reading here about Priyavrata, about Gandhari, about the women encouraging their husbands, this is the whole idea. And a man needs that, or most men, as I'm saying, except for the sannyasis, you know, they need the encouragement of their wife. So this is the role of the woman, to keep her husband enthusiastic so he can go outside the home and go slay the dragons. Bring home the pakoras, as they say. So, let's see, what else should we read? Oh yeah, okay, well it's getting late. I'm going to read one more thing about the duty of the women in terms of protecting society. And this is from Bhagavad Gita. You have Bhagavad Gita there? Chapter 1, text 40. Bhagavad Gita 1:40. When irreligion is prominent in the family, O Krishna, the women of the family become polluted, and from the degradation of womanhood, O descendant of Rishni, comes unwanted progeny. Purport. This is from the Collier version. I don't know if it's different in the BBT version, but I made a note of that, so it might be a little different. In the system of Varnashram, there are many principles and religious traditions to help the members of the family grow properly in spiritual values. The elderly members are responsible for such purifying processes in the family, beginning from birth to death. But on the death of family member, on the death of elderly members, such family traditions of purification might stop, and the remaining minor family members would develop irreligious habits, thereby losing their chance for spiritual salvation. Therefore, for no purpose should the elderly members of the family be killed. Good population in human society is the basic principle for peace, prosperity, and spiritual progress in life. This point is completely overlooked and misunderstood, or not even understood in modern society. People, they think they can copulate like animals and still have a good society. They're very wrong, which is the point of this verse, actually. Continuing, the Varnashram religion's principles are so designed that the good population would prevail in society for the general spiritual progress of state and community. Such population depends on the chastity and faithfulness of its womanhood. As children are very prone to be misled, women are similarly prone to degradation. Therefore, both children and women require protection by the elderly members of the family. By being engaged in various religious practices, women will not be misled into adultery. Chanakya Pandit, according to Chanakya Pandit, women are not very intelligent and therefore should not be trustworthy. Remind me to come back to that point. So the different family traditions of religious activities should always engage them, and thus their chastity and devotion will give birth to good population eligible for participating in the Varnashram system. On the failure of such Varnashram dharma, naturally the women become free to act and mix with men, and thus adultery is indulged in at the risk of unwanted population, exactly like we have today. Irresponsible men also provoke adultery in society, and thus unwanted children flood the human race at the risk of war and pestilence. So, just reaffirming the point I was making earlier, that it's the duty of the women actually to protect the society. Huh? How? By their chastity. And to see that the family traditions are followed. We spoke about the role of women in childhood to be trained by their mothers so that they can be good wives. They don't go to ashram with the spiritual master, rather they get trained at home. And then in marriage life to support their husbands. And in senior years, generally the women will stay with the sons and be the matriarch of the family and give guidance to the junior members of the family. So coming back to this point about being less intelligent. This, of course, is a controversial subject matter and quite misunderstood. And Bhaktivedya Purna Maharaj explains this very nicely. He's explaining that there's a difference, of course, between men and women, which nowadays that principle seems to be lost. A lot of people seem to think it's just a choice whether you want to be a male or a female. It's got nothing to do with your guna or karma or even your genitalia. You just choose one and that's what you can be, as ridiculous as that is. But there's a significant difference. For example, there's a difference in the structure of the brain. In the, there's two hemispheres of the brain, and in the women, the right hemisphere and left hemisphere, they have a lot of cross conversation. There's a lot of connections. Now the left side is the logic and right side is the emotional, right? And what this means, because the women have a lot of cross communication there, it means they have emotional intelligence. Well, this is not true for the men. For the men, they operate in one side of the brain or the other. So they can either operate in logic, what's to do, or they operate in passion or emotion. So that's good for warfare, right? When you're in war, you just like forget all the logic. It just goes out the window. You have to act. And otherwise, in normal life, then they have the logical side, and that's how they're thinking. You put a man, you put, let's say, women, because their emotional intelligence, they can deal with children in ways that men cannot. I mean, it's just very simple that they know how to be women. To put it simply. And they can take care of children. They can take care of situations. They know how to make people feel good, relax, create a nice environment, and so on. Men can't do that. They don't have the intelligence for it. Right. So if you look, for example, at the Brahmacharya ashram, you can see how the men are thinking about the environment, which is generally not very much, you know. So in the Vedic culture, it's explained that a house cannot be a home without a woman. Huh? I mean, a man or a bunch of men living together, they cannot have a home. You can't call it a home. It's a house, okay, but, you know, it's not a home. When a woman comes there, she'll decorate the place, she'll make it look nice, she'll make it comfortable. This is the nature of a woman. So what does it mean that the ladies are less intelligent? It means that they're unable, because of this emotional intelligence the way it is, they're unable to withdraw their emotions from the world. And consequently, they can't, you know, to take sannyas for a woman is ridiculous, because they can't do that. They can't withdraw. But because a man, his emotions are separated from his logic part, he can just operate in the logic side, withdraw himself emotionally from the world, and be able to function like that. So when it says that woman is less intelligent, it means that she does not have the ability or the intelligence for renunciation and for cutting herself off from the material side of life. Therefore, the Bhagavatam, as we explained the other day, the Bhagavatam is written from the man's perspective, because the general arrangement of Vedic culture was that the woman would follow her husband. She would go for the man, and the man would go for God. So if the man devotes himself to God, she follows him. Together, they both are successful. The crazy world today has men going after the women, and the women, they don't like that. Actually, they're not attracted to a man who's chasing them. Because it's not the natural arrangement of things. There's a very interesting video I saw about the European women. What's going on with all this refugees coming in? The general principle is that women, they like a strong man. They like a man who's a man, right? The yin-yang thing, right? So women are weak, men are strong. So what's happened in Europe is that the men have become emasculated by all this feminine agenda. They're very weak, and so they're no longer attractive to the women. And the women, they like all these refugees coming in. Oh, yes, strong men. Right? So ironic as that is. I mean, anyway. Strange world. This fellow, he went into a whole nice development of the whole idea, the whole concept, but that's the basic idea. Anyway, how to wind up. So the basic idea is that the role of women is to support their husbands, to raise and nurture the children, because a man simply can't do that. And everybody needs a mother. So we'll stop there. It's late already, but we can discuss. So all ladies, all those questions you've been saving up about, what about this? Okay, we can discuss it. Ladies should be engaged in what? Wait, here comes the microphone.
And in this last verse you read, I think it was said that ladies should be engaged in various religious practices. So can you maybe speak about this religious practice?
So I mentioned that a little bit earlier. That when they do a fire sacrifice, for example, both the husband and wife have to be there. But everything is actually, I don't understand it completely well. But the woman has to be there. It can't, the whole thing, there's no credit, there's no result if the woman isn't there. So it's very, very important from that perspective. What exactly her role is and how that happens, I don't, I used to know, but I've forgotten. But that's the idea. That, and this is based on the tradition of, you know, doing yajna and so on. Now, in Daivavana Ashram, that would be different because the sacrifice for the age is chanting Hare Krishna mantra. And so everybody can do that. It doesn't require any priest, any, you know, whatever, due to the nature of this age. So there's many things that are different from what was formerly done in Vanashram culture. There's many things that will be different from when Vanashram culture is again established. Is that sufficient? That's all I know, so. That's all you get. Sorry. What else? Come on. Give me the microphone. Hang on. Watch the wires.
I'll start with a joke. It's kind of a joke now. Bira Krishna Maharaj, he was asked by his mother, what is the role of the position of women in our society? And he was jokingly, he said, that they should be keep quiet and in the kitchen. So he got her angry.
That's a wrong answer to tell a woman.
And I remember that Urliman Mataji, she said that she was once attending a lecture on the role of women in Varnashram, and there wasn't no talking about this Vanaprastha stage, only but that the duty is to take care of the children and husband. So she was very disappointed about the whole lecture.
Well, typically, you know, we read the case of Gandhari following her husband to the mountains. This is very unusual, because especially at an elderly age. Okay, now in the past, vanaprastha meant you went and you lived in the forest. You didn't cut your hair. You didn't cut your fingernails. You didn't bathe. The whole idea was to neglect the body almost entirely so that you could become free from the demands for sense gratification. Okay? This is different from us, for us, because we follow the path of Nivritti Marg, which means renunciation all the way through. Why? Because we have a higher taste of Krishna consciousness. But previously, they were following Karmakanda. They wanted to enjoy the senses, And so they would do this, it was Bhoga Tyaga. They would enjoy for a while, and then for Vanaprastha, they would go live in the forest and just completely neglect the body. Now, okay, a man, maybe, today's men probably can't do that, but formerly men would do that. But, you know, to expect a woman to do that was, it's almost unreasonable, you know. Women, by their nature, are, you know, they're more gentle. They need more care. And so it was perfectly acceptable that the woman didn't go to the forest. She would stay with her family. She would become the matriarch, look after the family affairs, and give guidance. So, you know, talk about woman being a guru. There's another role. Huh? Adi guru, when the child is first born, and then when she becomes the matriarch, she's the head of the clan, and, you know, her opinion should be given some weight. But anyway, that's why women didn't, you know, is just because of the nature, what Vanaprastha was, that women wouldn't do that. Nowadays, you know, Vanaprastha, what is Vanaprastha today? Well, generally people don't go to the forest. First thing, there is no forest to go to. It's all owned by somebody. If you go to the forest, they'll arrest you for trespassing. So, you don't go to the forest, what do you do? Well, you know, I mean, many of the widows, they go to Vrindavan. We've all seen that. There's so many of the widows in Vrindavan, and they're begging and maintaining themselves somehow. But, you know, there's a group of devotees who are working to create, like, retirement villages, for senior devotees. And hopefully they'll be able to put that together so that devotees can go and have nice satsanga and you know, stay together for the remaining years in Krishna consciousness. What else? Over here, Pum. Oh, no.
Hare Krishna. I just wonder, in Kali Yuga, women need to be protected. Prabhupada always quoted that. Women can protect others when she feels that she's protected. When she feels that she is not protected, that somebody will abuse her in some way or another, just feel this is a fact, like that the person will abuse her. How much percent is here that she can protect others when she feels, and then when it's a fact that she is abused?
I'm not sure how accurately I can answer that. I'm not a psychologist, or I don't have clinical experience with such things. But your point, your question raises another point that I wanted to make, which I forgot, which is a lot of this subordination of women depends upon qualified man. That if the man is qualified and actually protects his wife, she then can be submissive. If he's not qualified and he simply tries to exploit her in various ways, she can feel that and she can't surrender to him. So, right, it's a dance. The man has to do his part so that she can do her part. And it depends on the man. It's explained like this. That the Purusha, he creates, or the Purusha creates the Chaitra, the place. So the man gets the house, or he takes the initiative to bring the relationship together. How the relationship develops depends on the woman and how she responds to the man. If she doesn't respond, it's not going anywhere. So he does his part, which is, it's almost like in a more passive, or even you could say impersonal way, that he makes the arrangement for the relationship, but how the relationship develops depends on her. But in either case, the man has to be qualified. You know, so many of the problems today aren't due to, you know, we see this in ISKCON marriages, unfortunately. You're not being submissive, wife. Well, he's not being a proper husband. Huh? So, but you can't tell him that, right? So, this is the problem. The problem is, in Kali Yuga, nobody's qualified. We have to first become a little civilized, and come up to a little sattva-gun. Of course, a lot of that, you know, there's so much social engineering going on in the world, it's very difficult. The men are emasculated. They don't know how to be a man. They're not allowed to be a man, right? And it's the same for a woman. I was discussing that with some devotees. Where was it? It was here in Slovenia. We were talking about this somehow or other, and they say, well, a man's no longer allowed to be a man. And then I think the wife of the couple we were with, she said, yeah, and women aren't allowed to be women anymore either. Which was interesting to hear because I didn't know that. But, you know, so this is Kali Yuga, right? Nirvishesha Shunyavadi. You can't even be who you are. And it's becoming even worse with all the politically correct nonsense. Did I answer your question at all?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Is she back here? She had a question? No, go this way.
So loud. My question is about how, when you said that in Varnashram Dharma that kings organized everything so that people can live in a kingdom, but he didn't want crazies and lazies. And so, I mean, I think maybe some women also fall into these categories. So,
crazies and lazies?
Yeah, or for example, seems like in this Varnashram, women who are not mothers and good wives, they're also unwanted. So I mean, or widows, for example, like.
Yeah, well, you know, the situation is today is, for everybody, you have to earn your place in the world. You have to somehow or other, earn your value. You know, it's not enough that you just, are there in a sattvic culture. Everybody gets taken care of. In the tamasic culture, you only get taken care of if somebody can exploit you in some way or get something from you, right? So somebody can get something from you, therefore you can get a job. And, you know, so it depends on what do you have to give to society. If you don't have anything to give, you know, you're kicked to the curb, thrown out. So, you know, it's true for women as well as men. We have many homeless women in the United States. They call them bag ladies, right? They're always collecting with their, keeping their belongings in a few plastic bags. And it's very, very terrible to see. That, you know, especially elderly woman. She's nobody to take care of her. No sons, perhaps no family, no children. And she's living on the street somehow or other. Very dangerous situation. So, anyway, it's Kali Yuga. And, what's the solution? The solution is Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Otherwise, there's no hope for this world. No? It's just a society less than animals. Okay.
Yes.
Over here. Somebody bring the mic.
Mm-hmm. I have a question regarding what you mentioned that...
Regarding what?
Regarding the sentence that you mentioned that wife is supposed to be subordinate to the husband and serve him, and he's supposed to be in contact with Krishna and link her to Krishna. Uh-huh. Is it always like that? Because I know...
Is it always like that?
Yes, I know there are like many, many, many cultures when women would be considered the wisdom carriers that have a connection with God.
Yeah, what I'm saying is general principle, and there's always exceptions to the rule. Mm-hmm. Always exceptions. Just like you see in any of our temples, there's always less women than men. I don't know if it's sociological. I don't know what the reasons are for that, because there's no brahmacharini ashram. There could be many reasons, but somewhere or other it's always the case. So, is that some proof? I don't know.
I was a part of many different cultures throughout the world, and where there would be mostly women prominent in, you know, spirituality, not so much men. So how to actually balance this part that each partners in a relationship have the connection to the divine?
I'm not saying that that's the ideal situation, that the woman shouldn't be interested in spiritual life. Don't misunderstand me like that. Okay. That, again, because of this, the nature between, the difference in nature between man and woman, it's easier for man to separate himself from the world and to go for spiritual things. Woman is more difficult. She's emotionally attached to children, to family, and so on. That doesn't mean that a woman should not or may not try to develop a relationship with Krishna. And the Bhagavatam, you know, we are only able to read some stories, but there's many examples in the Bhagavatam of women who are wonderful devotees and inspiration for everyone. Queen Kunti, of course, is very prominent. We didn't say anything about her. So it's not exclusive on either side. There's always wonderful exceptions to the rule. But the general rule holds, I think. Do you have a different opinion? Anyway, you know, I can't say what I'm saying is the absolute truth in that regard. It's, you know, based on what the Bhagavatam says, what Prabhupada's comments, on my own experience, it seems that, like that. But, you know, and culturally, there may certainly be differences. You know, I'm coming from American background, and I can only see cultures like here very superficially. So you know it much better than I would.
Yes, I experienced different cultures having different connection with the divine through their culture and either their rituals or ceremonies or, you know. But mostly what I've experienced so far is that women were more in connection with the divine than men, yes.
Mm-hmm. Lead the way. Be a wonderful example for everybody.
This isn't Kali Yuga.
The other question that I wanted to ask is regarding the relationships between the family members. Like in 7th Canto, it's mentioned that the wife is supposed to, you know, serve and respect all the family members and so on. Now at the end, when you were mentioning wife should be Adi Guru and should be the first guru to children and take care of children and also take care of husband. And then you say, after all, we're only the mother, Did you also mean by, you know?
We're only the mother?
We only the mother.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So does that mean that also a wife should be the mother of the husband?
No. No, she should be the wife of the husband, not the mother.
Okay, so how to...
He has a mother when he's young.
How to differentiate this rasa, how to still serve him and not to become his mother?
I think you ask the other ladies. They'll have more experience than I do. I can't answer such a question.
Yes, I wonder, actually, for example, if the couple decides or that they won't have kids or they can't have them for some reason, what is the role of the woman then? How, because then she, the households nowadays are pretty small, so then she doesn't really need to stay at home, or how is it?
That changes everything. If they can't have children, because family life means children, basically. I don't know. Can't think of any examples of couples that I know who are childless. But, you know, I mean, basically it depends then on what they want to do, I suppose. I don't know. Yeah, you know, everybody needs to have some engagement. So if the woman's not, you know, not preoccupied with children, then what, she has to find something to do.